You are listening to the Life Is Not Complicated, You Are Strong Opinions podcast, produced by Charles Andrews, with your host, best-selling author.
Identify yourself.
Carlos Wallace. Best-selling author.
You are listening to the Life Is Not Complicated Strong Opinions podcast. I am your host for today, Liz Faubliss. Carlos Wallace is on a motivational speaking tour, so I am taking the helm this time around, hoping I don't mess this up because, you know, no one can do it as good as the boss can, but I'm definitely going to try. And I think my next guest is going to make it very, very easy. His name is Yasser Ahmed, and he is probably one of the most articulate, humble. I'm going to embarrass you, Yasser. I'm sorry, but I have to. I've been bragging about you. And what I appreciate the most is the most engaging and polite young men that I've ever had the pleasure of speaking with. Polite millennials that I've ever had the pleasure of speaking with. So basically, I'm going to dig deep into this young man's life because we've talked before about his goals, his education, his family life, but there's so much more I want to learn from him. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I've labeled you a millennial, so, you know, take it from there.
All right. Well, before I do that, I just want to say thank you for having me. I really enjoy our little conversations through the hallway and the elevator and the laundry room. And I'm really glad that right now we're doing this podcast. So thank you for having me as one of your guests. I'm truly honored. And like Ms. Liz said, my name is Yasser Ahmed. I'm 21 years old. I was born in New York, and I have lived here all my life, so I don't only bleed big blue, I bleed almost every single New York sport team, except the Mets and Jets. And
no judgments.
Yep. And I've been in Queens my whole life, so I went to my middle school, my elementary school, high school, even college. I currently attend St. John's University, and I'm an only child, and being an only child, I didn't even have cable when I was younger, so I would just be flipping through the channels. And most sports, like you would see, like baseball, basketball, you would have to have cable for that. But for football, every day I would turn on the TV on Sunday, channel 2, channel 4, channel 5. All you would see is football. So I decided, you know what, let me give this sport a chance. Let me see what this is all about. And
you teach me a lot about the sport. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, you know, we have great conversations, and I know the rudimentary stuff, like I know the players, but you are really into it.
Uh-huh.
You know statistics, you know players, you even know about their personal life. What is it about football that really just makes you so passionate?
Well, football is one of those sports where a lot of people debate it, you know, is it too dangerous? You know, should we stop it? Should we, like, get rid of the sport itself? And, you know, me being an American, you know, there's a lot of sports, international sports like soccer and even baseball and basketball. But what makes America, I believe, is football. Football is America. It brings everybody to the TV. It's like church almost. Football, it brings everybody together. It's 53 men on a team. It's defense. There's a team for defense. There's a team for offense. There's a team for special. There's, you know, in a game you could have one player just change the whole game, or like one little mistake. There's throwing the football, there's running the football, there's trick plays, there's going for it on fourth down, you know, like the possibilities are endless, and that's why I love
this. You literally have reiterated most of what Carlos Wallace feels about the game of football.
Right.
I promise you. He's obviously a huge fan, Cowboys. But we're not going to downgrade the boss. But he's a Cowboys fan, diehard Cowboys fan, mm-hmm. win or lose. But the aspects that you just described about mm-hmm. the game is something that he is definitely always talking about, and he's written about it in one of his books.
Oh wow.
He's written about it in a book that I collaborated on called The Other 99 Times. And he talks about the fact that football really is a sport where everybody has a role. No one person determines
exactly
who wins that game.
Yep.
The quarterback, you know, may throw, mm-hmm. you know, and the receiver may catch it, and there's the touchdown, mm-hmm. but everyone and everything in between played a role.
And a lot of games in history, you know, like Buffalo, they went to Super Bowl 4 times, and I forgot which Super Bowl it was. I believe it was the first one. The game was determined on a field goal, and the kicker missed the field goal, and they lost the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, like, people say, you know, kick the kicker, the punter, they really don't, that's not really a football player. But if you don't have a good one and it's crunch time, that determines if you win the game or not. So, like you just said, literally every single player, like even not even the players, the coach, the culture, you know, if you have a coach with a coach mentality, like that's a leader, that also determines your, it doesn't matter how athletic you are, you know, we have Odell Beckham, he's the most athletic guy, but you know, like, but I don't, like, I've never seen someone like control him or mentor him, you know, like if he had that, if he had like a Greg Popovich or if he had a Bill Belichick or someone, you know, to say, Odell, you have so much potential, let's keep those emotions aside and lead you. No, we know for sure, you know, he's a generational talent, but that's not enough, you know. It matters how you are with your teammates, it matters how you are with your team. And like you said, you know, football, it's a team sport. It's not.
Who mentors you? Who's that motivational person? Who's your guide?
Honestly, I would say I don't really have a person. I'm a person who's more like looks at things and that motivates me myself. For example, like my mother, she is my motivation, but what motivates me more is not her, but what she does herself. Like she works, she put herself through school when she was like 35. That motivated me. I have a lot of people in my family and they have all went to college. A lot of them failed out of college and I see them how they are now. I see like, you know, like they're sitting on the couch, they don't go anywhere. That motivates me to like make sure that, you know, where I am right now in my life in college, I can mess this up, so that motivates me. And seeing people less fortunate than me, they're where they are right now in their life, they're really high up there, they're, you know, they're doing things, they're getting degrees, they're having great jobs, they're getting married, they're buying houses for their mother, that motivates me. So for me, it's myself. I don't necessarily have a person because I'm my own person, but seeing what people do and their actions and where they are in life, that's what motivates me.
I love that. You are in the pharmacy program, correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm in the pharmacy school for St. John's, okay. But the program I'm in is the physician assistant program.
Talk to me about that.
All right, well, St. John's physician assistant program, it's a four-year direct program. Usually it takes about 6 years for you to become a physician assistant, but in St. John's, they have a direct program. It's a very, very hard program. Where a lot of people don't know what a PA is, but basically a physician assistant is like the doctor's right-hand man. Like in a hospital, you know, like just like in sports, we have a cap. We can't afford every star player. Hospital has the same thing. They can't afford, you know, 1,000 doctors under their roof because they're going to go bankrupt. So what they do is they have a doctor, and under the doctor, there's about 9 or 7 PAs that work under them. They do everything. They prescribe medicine. They do the procedures, they even do operations, they diagnose, they triage, they do everything with the patient. So that's what a PA basically does. And I decided to do it because, you know, like I come from, I'm Bengali, I'm a Muslim person, and a lot of people don't know, but we have a lot of pressure on us. You know, our parents are all like immigrants, so they expect us to be up there because we're living the American dream. And I thought about med school a lot, but I really thought about it and realized, you know, I won't live in this world forever, and you know, if I spend like a good chunk of my life in school, I really won't be living. I'd rather finish school in 4 years, treat patients, help the sick people, make decent money. I won't make, you know, all the money doctors do, but I still will make a good living.
I don't know that yet.
I still will make a good living. I'll have a great family life. You know, I was the only child, so I want to grow up and have a family. So I decided to choose a PA, and St. John's was the most perfect program for me.
It is an intense program.
Oh yeah.
I can literally go weeks without seeing you, and I have to ask your mom and dad how you're doing, because worry about you. What do you do for fun?
Honestly,
Or you just have to put that aside for now.
Well, in my PA school, we have a ping pong table, and that's basically like my only ping pong. You know, I have an Apple Watch. It tells me like, I'm always sitting on the chair and table, so I don't really move. The only time I see my calories being burned is when I play ping pong. That's it. I don't have any other type of fun, you know. Maybe if my professor makes a corny joke about health or medicine, maybe that makes me laugh now, you know. I just do that, or I just watch funny stuff, you know, on YouTube to keep me sane. I watch football. I watch highlights. I watch the life of football players. Sports is my the only thing that keeps me sane, basically, when I'm going through
this. We had a rough year. We had a rough season.
Oh, yeah.
What was it like before we close out this segment, because I want to leave with that so that we can begin the next segment on the same note. What was it like having to always defend your team to people, good or bad?
It was definitely hard because New York Giants, you know, they're at a whole different echelon of franchises. They're a historic franchise. They're not one of those franchises where you see a lot of scandals. You don't see the cops being involved. You don't see, you know, players fighting or like coaches being fired. But recently, like now with our losing records, that's what we've been seeing. And it's been really hard because, you know, we could say, oh, Eli Manning, he beat Tom Brady twice. He made Tom Brady like that perfect season. It didn't happen just because of Eli. But, you know, we're at a new day, new age. History is history, and today is today. And all those players are not here anymore. And it's really hard. But honestly, like, all the decisions they've made, not all of them have been good, but I like the direction that New York is going at, because like winning a Super Bowl, it's not like you're going shopping, you're just gonna buy players and that's it. Like, you're gonna win the Super Bowl. That's what we saw with the LA Rams. Mm-hmm. They were the most loaded team, they had all the talent, but they fell short. They didn't put up any offense or any of those points up in the Super Bowl. But I like the coach. I like his old mentality. I like that they didn't get rid of Eli because, you know, everybody always says, you know, why didn't you draft the quarterback number two overall? Mm-hmm. I like to think about it like this. For example, if I have liver failure because I'm an alcoholic, I can't just get another liver and just keep drinking. That's not how it works. If I want to live long and I want to keep my liver, I have to go sober. I have to take care of my body. Then I could go for a transplant. If we selected a quarterback number two overall behind that offensive line, that guy would have been toast. He would have been out. His career would have been done three seasons in. You know, like, look what happened to Andrew Luck. His kidney literally got lacerated because no one protected him. Mm. So with no protection, we weren't ready for a franchise quarterback. You know, Eli, like, he takes all the hits, he doesn't see a single peep, and he took it. And selecting Saquon number two overall, I've never seen an athlete like him.
You've talked about that.
I know we didn't select a quarterback. We still have a high draft pick. We have a franchise running back, which we haven't had for years. We have great receivers. We're maybe, like, I don't know what we're going to select this year, but I really like where the Giants are going this year.
All right. I think we have a Giants fan, ladies and gentlemen. We also have this moment to take a break. You are listening to the Life is Not Complicated Strong Opinions podcast with my guest and one of the greatest young men that I've ever had the opportunity to talk to, Yasir Ahmed. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
The things students say, like, you know, man, because of this book, I didn't commit suicide. Because of this book, I can now speak in public and come out of my shell. Because of this book, I'm not so worried about what other people say about me, you know, not looking for their validation. That's what touches me.
My favorite chapter was about not letting either your boss, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, family, anybody get in your way of being successful in whatever it is you want to do.
To purchase Life is Not Complicated, You Are, or the other 99 times, or to download the audio versions, please visit CarlosWallace.com. Welcome back to the Life is Not Complicated Strong podcast. I am your host for today, Liz Faubliss, filling in for Carlos Wallace, who is on a motivational speaking tour. So, of course, I'm trying to fill some pretty big shoes, but I'm having a great time doing it. I am joined here by my guest, Yasir. We've been having an incredible conversation, and he's been enlightening me so much just about the way millennials think and just about the course of the future for this new, very enlightened, very powerful, and very strong generation. We left off the last segment talking about sports, talking about Giants, and also talking about what it's like to have to defend sports. I want to change gears right now and talk about that loyalty and that defense with regard to faith. Now, Yasir, you are Muslim. I want to know from you what it's like being a young Muslim millennial, given what that faith has had to endure over the course of so many years, and of course in recent times the Muslim faith has literally, it's been under attack on so many different levels. So you are Muslim. What is it like for you on a day-to-day basis?
You know, just like you're saying, it was a challenge. It was always a challenge because, you know, my last name, right off the bat, mm-hmm. that tells you something.
So you're judged as soon as people right. know your mm-hmm. name.
And that happens because, you know, my last name starts with an A, and usually I'm the first name on the attendance sheet. So mm-hmm. my name's the first one called. You could kind of see my complexion. You could tell, like, you know, I'm not American. So it's definitely hard. And growing up, I had a lot of, like, hatred towards those like who say, you know, I'm Muslim, what's the problem? But as I grew up, I realized that these people, you know, what they think, it's not necessarily their fault. All like, you know, the Muslim name, the tarnish, the way that we've been called extremists, mm-hmm. you know, all that. I, instead of being a person who says, you know, these people are ignorant, I realized that, you know, like humans, they say whatever they say, they think however they think by what they see. If you go back in history, you know, there have been really, really bad wars, but one of the saddest wars that America remembers is the Vietnamese War, because that was one of the first wars that was televised. People saw dead soldiers all over the floor.
It was graphic.
It was graphic.
But and it was real.
It was real, and what people don't realize is that that wasn't even one of the worst wars. There were so many, World War I, World War II. You know, just because we didn't televise it, people don't realize how bad it is. Mm-hmm. So being a Muslim, seeing it as I'm an American, I consider myself more American than Bengali because I have been, I was born here and I was brought up here. I realize that what these people, they act and they think how they think because of what they see.
But you're a practicing Muslim.
Right. I am a practicing Muslim.
What is your day like? You pray five times a day. Mm-hmm. You have the Salat.
Right, exactly. So we pray five times a day. We pray in before the crack of dawn. We pray in noon, afternoon, by sunset, and at night.
Does St. John's afford you a place where you can
pray? Oh, yeah. They have a great room. It's carpeted. They actually have two rooms where the woman could go and the men could go. Mm-hmm. They have a club, the Muslim Student Association. They have a whole week, actually, dedicated every single day where, you know, the Muslims could have their Friday prayer. Like, you guys have church on Sundays, we have prayer on Friday. We have a day where on Friday where we have the Friday prayer at the Great Lawn. And, you know, they're very great with that. You know, it's a Catholic school, but St. John's, it welcomes all cultures.
Yeah, they're very diverse. I'm a proud alum myself, mm-hmm. so I know that for a fact. Do your parents share their feelings and experiences with you having to navigate this society here in United States as a Muslim man and a Muslim woman?
Oh yeah, they definitely do, because I grew up with kind of everything. I had, I knew how to speak English since I was a baby. They didn't. I had a great education system. I went to school when I was young, like just like everybody else. They necessarily didn't have that. School for them was way different. So I didn't realize how fortunate I am or how easy I thought everything was easy, but when they came, you know, they didn't have a job. They didn't know how to speak English that properly. They didn't know what street led to what street. They didn't know what train to take to go to where. So, and on top of that, being Muslim, you know, like, where can I get, like, a halal meal? Where can I get halal meat? Where can I go and pray?
You know? Neighborhood you live in, though, has really come into its own with regard to
mm-hmm. There's a mosque here. Many, like, about, I would say, 10 years ago, or, like, even before that, like, this mosque was here, and before, like, people, after they would pray, they'd have their prayer clothing on, they would walk home, and they'd get attacked, because there would be less Muslim people, and I guess since there wasn't as much, people didn't want them to be in the area, and there have been a lot of people who were attacked, people were scared, but I guess people, like, they stuck to the mosque, they stuck to the culture, and, you know, now it's like, it's majority is Muslim people. If you actually walk down the street on a Friday, you'll see people are praying on the street because there's no space in the mosque. Mm. So I really like that. I really like the fact that how my mom and dad, they really didn't have nothing. Like, right now, if you told me you have no money, you have no clothes, you don't know English as well, you have no diploma, you have no degree, go out there and try to, like, survive. I wouldn't be able to. But they left their home, they left their friends, they left their family, they left what they're used to every day, and they came to a whole new world.
And let's continue to give props to mom and dad, who mm-hmm. you know I love, mm-hmm. but they're very successful now. They worked hard. What is your dad doing now?
My dad, he actually had an accident in 05, and he was unemployed for about 13 years. And he was just home, you know, he was either at the hospital or home, but now he also went to school. He went back to school around like late 30s, early 40s. Mm-hmm. And he got a business degree, I believe a bachelor's in business. And now he's filing people's taxes, and it's tax season. So he's really busy.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom, and my mom, when my dad had that accident, you know, my mom didn't work. She was home with me and she didn't have a job. My dad didn't work. And, you know, I don't have another sibling. It was just me, my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. So my mom realized, you know, like, we're not that wealthy. We can't, you know, just ask my grandparents for money. My mom went back to school. She did her bachelor. She got her MBA in business administration. And she was even offered a PhD degree at Columbia. But because I was so young at that time, my mom declined it. And she applied she took her civil service exam. And now she's a human resource administration worker. And she decides who gets government aid with their rent for people who can't afford it.
Oh, wow, that's an important job. Mm-hmm. Very admirable, mm-hmm. Very admirable. Like I said, I'm quite a fan of your mom and your dad. And they're respectable, they're kind.
Mm-hmm.
It's so difficult to live, not just in a building, you mm-hmm. know, with so many people, but in society, and have people that you can actually be cordial with. It's like everybody mm-hmm. has their eyes focused straight ahead, no one wants to speak. Everybody is just in their own world, or they're afraid to speak because they don't know whether they'll be accepted. I know my mom, she has just a mild complex about her accent, but uh-huh. she's one of the strongest women I know, you know, mm-hmm. so she's, I finally told her to really get over it because
right.
people really need to hear what she has to say. My mom mm-hmm. is such an intelligent person and she's so funny. So I appreciate the fact that your mother and father have never been that way with me.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
right.
they've always just been open and engaging, and mm-hmm. And I can see their influence, you know, through you, through your eyes, through your vision, through the way that you speak. So, incredibly impressed.
Thank you.
What is the biggest misconception? And I know this is such a heavy question to pose mm-hmm. to you. What's the biggest misconception about Islam, about being a Muslim?
The biggest misconception I would say is that people think Islam is a super strict religion and that you're not allowed to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But Islam, it's a very forgiving religion and it's actually a really peaceful religion. You know, like how you just said, my grandparents when they come, my mom and dad.
Yeah.
Islam teaches you if women just cover their hair with a scarf, if men just grow their beard or just go to the mosque, that's not what a Muslim is.
Mm-hmm.
Muslim, there's so many parts, you know. There's a thing about Islam that says, you know, you have to be super kind to your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Our Prophet Muhammad, he had a neighbor and the neighbor didn't like Muhammad because she was a non-Muslim. Every single day she'd leave like rocks and sharp stuff on the floor and Muhammad would walk over it and he'd cut his feet. That would happen every day. And then one day when Muhammad walked out, he saw the ground was clear and he thought, you know, where's the woman? Where's all the stuff that she leaves back so I could get hurt?
Challenges and obstacles
right.
that she used to try to hurt.
And then he saw that his neighbor was really sick. She couldn't even get out of her bed. And Muhammad, instead of saying, you know, like, you know, she deserves it, karma, what goes around comes around, he took care of her and he made sure that she got better. And that itself made her turn into a Muslim.
Wow, she converted.
She converted, right. So Islam, and there's another thing about Islam, because since we're talking about, you know, since you are my neighbor, there was someone who there's a woman who would pray. She'd pray for hours. She, you know, she would do all the good things. But one thing she would do was give her neighbors trouble. And there was another woman during that same time who was a prostitute, and which is a sin, and she sinned her entire life. And one day she was walking in the desert and she saw a dog who was thirsty and she filled her shoe with water and fed the dog. Both the prostitute woman passed away and the practicing woman passed away, but the woman who was praying all the time, who was, you know, like a very great believer,
mm-hmm.
she was given hell because she was given, she was really rude to her neighbors, whereas the woman who was a prostitute was granted heaven because before she died, she did a great deed.
Now, the similarities between what you're describing and Catholicism only drives home the point to me that we look for divisiveness, because at the core of our faith, there are so many similarities.
Right.
Like, there's really no reason, and I know this sounds very looking through life through rose-colored lenses, but there really is no reason to hate one another.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There are more similarities than there are differences.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Just like you said, you know, all the things that Muslims, you know, these extremist acts, all these people getting killed, all these...
And there are extremists in all religions,
right?
All faith.
Mm-hmm. And even like, even if you tell me, like, you know, this person who did this horrible thing, who killed so many people because he's a Muslim and because these other people aren't, that's not what Islam is. Just like I told you, you know, like his Muhammad's neighbor was not Muslim. I believe she was Jewish. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that you're gonna kill all of every person who is a Jew. You know, like Islam, you have to be really peaceful for if you tell me right now that you're practicing Christian, I can't be like, oh God, please save her. I have to say that, you know, you're a great person to me. You're my neighbor. I love you for who you are. If, you know, something I say or do goes against your faith, let me know. I will make sure I won't do that.
Is that easy for you, or do you have to work at having that kind of mentality?
It's easy for me because, like I said before, Islam is a religion of peace. It's about acceptance. If my friend tells me, you know, I'm gay, I can't be like, listen, man, I'm a Muslim. I fear hell for you. I can't say that because that's how I think. How I think doesn't mean that you have to think how I think. This world is the way it is because everybody thinks a certain way. Even with religion, you know, for people who are religious, there's certain levels to it. Some people eat halal, some people don't. That's fine. You still believe in Allah, you know? Mm-hmm. So if I'm Muslim and the way I think and practice, but someone else doesn't, I can't say anything. All I could say is, God, you know, just keep this person good, grant this person heaven, and, you know, I'm going to make sure I do what I know I'm supposed to do, and however this person picks his own destiny, or she picks her own destiny. She gets to do what she does, and as a Muslim, that's how you're supposed to think. You're not supposed to force anything. You're not supposed to beat a person and make them think the way you do. That's not what a Muslim does.
If I had any choice in this, I would loop what you just said in the last 10 seconds over and over again on a giant megaphone in the world, because really at the heart of it, that's it. This is a perfect spot to take a break.
Okay.
We'll come back. We have a lot more to talk about.
All right.
Politics is next, baby. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
I was born ready.
I know you were.
You are listening to the Life is Not Complicated. You are Strong Opinions Podcast.
Welcome back to the Life is Not Complicated Strong Opinions Podcast. I am having the most amazing conversation with my young friend here, Yasser Ahmed. He's been enlightening me, as I've been saying, on so many different things, on sports, on faith, on the thoughts of millennials. And I want to continue that conversation and get deeper and deeper into the mind of millennials and deeper into getting to know Yasser a little bit more. You are 21 years old and you don't drink. You don't smoke, you don't do drugs. How is that even possible in a society where influences are coming at you from north, south, east, and west?
Like I told you before, like me, like everything I do it based off what I see. You know, like I'm a person who, like, you know, studies super hard for the first test. Even like for some classes, I even got an 100 on the first test. Like I've gotten the highest score, and because I did so well, I started getting lazy, you know, and saying, you know, I'm really good. But then I realized that, you know, like, I realized, like, I studied hard, that's why I did good. And when I don't study good, I don't do well.
You don't get complacent.
Right, okay. Exactly. So it's the same way with all these things, drug, alcohol. I've seen, I'm not saying every person who takes a sip of alcohol or every person who pops a pill or smokes, you know, is bad. But I've seen how, like, for some people, these things have basically ruin their life or even end of their life. And I've seen that these things are very, very addictive. And addictive things, you know, they control your life. You know, the money you save, you end up spending it, like, when you're supposed to be somewhere, like at work or somewhere, you, instead of going there, you're doing drugs. And I had a lot of friends who were really, really, like, addicted to drugs. And seeing them, you know, like, I'm not saying, again, like, drinking alcohol or, you know, having a
You're not judging.
Occasional, like, you know, wine with pasta or, like, you know, going to the bar celebrating, that's not bad. But for me, like, my religion says, you know, like, don't do drugs. Like, our Islam says, you know, we're supposed to pray 5 times a day. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be cognitive. We're supposed to be sane. So that's why we're not supposed to drink. Because when you drink, you know, you get drunk. You don't think properly. So that's why we don't drink. Islam doesn't permit drugs because, you know, like, Islam, even gambling is considered haram. It's forbidden because money is something that's really valuable. Mm-hmm. And when you want to squander it, that's basically saying that you don't care. You care more about, like, you could lose it and you don't care. So, like, just buying drugs, that's like you're paying the person for drugs, and that's going to harm you. Maybe it's going to give you euphoria for a little bit, but long run, it's harming your body, and you could have been doing so much more with that money. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been taught. And like you said before, a lot of my friends, you know, they drink alcohol. I actually went on a trip the day I found out I was going to PA school. Me and my three of my PA school friends, we took a trip to California. And
oh boy.
Yeah, it was fun. And you know, like, we were in a what do you call it? Airbnb.
Okay.
And the person left alcohol for us, you know. So
thinking they're doing a good thing.
Yeah.
A bunch of teenagers coming from New York. To
right.
Enjoy some time.
So three of my friends, one of them are Hindu, two of them are Christian, and they drank, but they didn't drink in such a way where, you know, like, oh, let's get drunk and have fun and, like, let's leave Yasser out of it. They're like, you know, like, let's just sit down, let's talk. They gave me a seltzer water bottle, and I was drinking seltzer water. And we were, you know, it was actually fun because, you know, they're having a good time, and I was having a good time, and that was great. And then there was not a lot of halal places out in LA, so I had to eat a lot of seafood. So, you know, we tried each other's food, and, you know, I would try some of my friends' food, they tried some of mine, and then when I would, you know, sometimes try my friends, they would say, wait, you know, like, the pork is by the mashed potatoes, don't eat it because I know you don't eat pork. You know, that's how my friends are.
Amazing.
And they're not Muslims either, but they know that I'm Muslim and I don't eat this. They could have easily said, you know, like, it's not my problem, he eats it, it's his problem. But they knew that I'm not allowed to eat pork, so they said, you know, like, don't go for the mashed potatoes because I have my bacon next to it. You know, you could try my salad if you want, or my coleslaw.
See, now you, unless you did, but mm-hmm. I don't imagine that you set out and handpicked your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that it's a blessing that you're surrounded by peers that are just so thoughtful of your faith and the way you think and your goals in life?
Definitely, especially in today's world where you see a lot of people, like, you know, doing extreme things, you know, people hating Muslims, saying that, you know, we don't belong here, with Muslims getting deported, with Muslims being banned to come into the country. You know, Muslims have a very, like, you know, when you wake up, like Sean Diddy Combs on Ellen, you know, Ellen acts on Halloween, are you scared of clowns? He said, no, because I'm black. I'm a black man in America. That's scary enough for me. You know, that was something funny, but I realized he has a point because, you know, it's not easy being an African American in America. So it's like the same thing, you know, like being judged for who you are. When you have Islam, like, attached to your name, you know, there's a lot of things. If my name was, let's say, Osama, which is a Muslim name, mm-hmm. you wouldn't think about me, you'd think about someone else.
Absolutely.
Before that. So
these preconceived notions.
Right. So there's a lot of things with it. So having friends who, you know, don't judge me, who know what my faith is, know what my limits are, mm-hmm. Never putting me in a difficult situation, not having to deal with peer pressure, you know, like, drink, join the frat, you know, like, finish this whole can, or, like, you know, like, do something bad, or, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Having friends like that, it is a blessing because I get to practice my religion, and just like Islam is peaceful, and just like I'm supposed to accept everybody else accepts me for who I am too.
At the time that we're doing this interview, I don't want to date it, but I do want to say we are now in the throes of the Jussie Smollett scandal.
Mm-hmm.
You've had some strong opinions about that.
Yes, I have.
Talk to me about that, because I think, I don't want to say the general consensus, I don't like to paint broad brushes, but mm-hmm. a lot of people do feel the act really set us back.
It definitely did.
On so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts with it. Like, even besides what he did, knowing that, man, you're an African-American guy in America who made it to Hollywood. First of all, that's hard itself. You know, like Obama, first president, that's amazing. He was our first black president. You're someone who is, instead of being, you know, incarcerated or being brutally, you know, like police brutality, you're not one of those African Americans who are dealing with that. You're not one of those African Americans who are accidentally shot. You're not, and on top of that, you're African American, and on top of that, you're gay. So there's other people who, like, you know, like do such, like they have hate against or homophobic. You're African American, you're gay, and you made it in Hollywood. You're not a great actor, but you're a very talented singer, and I've watched the show.
You're a fan of the show.
I am a fan of the show.
You're speaking now as a fan of the
show. Right, and you know, like, out of all the artists that have gone there, I loved his music the most because his voice literally hit my soul. And he was one of the sons of Lucius Lyon, who was the least accepted because he was gay and because he's not a rapper, he's a vocal soul artist. And you know, like, he was great. His voice really hit me, and I loved his music, and I loved what he stood for. And you know, to be in a show where there's so much, you know, like flamboyant people like Lucius, growing the street, Hakeem, you know, has that swag, has that hip-hopness. Oh, Cookie.
Oh, Lord.
You know, after you...
We can't leave out Cookie.
We can't. After you, I would say that she's my favorite. After you. But,
you.
Yeah.
I didn't even pay him to sing.
So, you know, like, him, I loved it. But seeing what he... When I first heard the story, I was so sad because...
Disappointing.
Here he was. Like, when I first heard that he was attacked, I, you know, at that time, everybody thought he was attacked. I thought, you know, like... It's 2019, man. Like, grow up. You know, this guy is a movie star. If you do something to anyone, you're gonna get caught. If you do it to someone who's high profile, there's no way you're gonna get away with it.
That's right.
He was, he said that people threw acid at him, at his face, and said homophobic things. And I said, you know what? Like, he'll bounce back from it, and he did. You know, after that, he was in a crowd, and he said, you know, I'm gonna come back. This is not gonna keep me down. And I said, you know what, Jesse, this is you. But the second I heard that he paid two people to do it, I wasn't even mad at the fact that he staged this whole thing. Again, you're an African-American guy in America. You're gay. And you're a movie star. You get paid for that. And you're using that money to stage a hoax. Like, you don't think you could have used that money for anything else? There's so many people in the world today that don't have money, and you have it, and you're spending it. I know it wasn't like a couple hundred. It must have been a few thousand dollars to convince two people to attack you and make it look real. So to know that this guy has made it through all odds against him, through all the things that people could say, you know, like, again, you're African American.
Just to throw it away.
Throw it away and spend it on something like...
For whatever reason.
Yeah, you don't even need it. You're successful. Like, if I think about someone who's African American or even like gay, I would point them to you to say that, look, this TV show is a script, but your character really speaks to those people who want to come out. Who...
So whereas he could have... continue to be a role model and an activist, which mm-hmm. he was, mm-hmm. now he is like the poster child for just for lying.
Right. And you know, like, I don't know why he does it. It's just like a lot of like stars in sports who take steroids. Like, you're one of those people who were drafted, who was selected and is representing a ball club. Mm-hmm. And you know, you represent a whole city. If you don't fail, if you don't, you know, get the stats, if you don't get the win, your city has your back. City, the people still buy your jerseys. Why do you have to pump yourself with steroids? Who are you trying to impress? Only people who know what's going on is you and God. And obviously God can't, you know, sell you out. But you have nothing else to prove. Just be who you are. And if you get the stats you need, it's based off of your pure talent. And it's the reason why you were selected. Jesse Smollett. You're a star. I have your music on my phone and I listen to it. Wow. I listen to how powerful your words are and how, like, you know, like, your words are not, like, they don't rhyme. They have a purpose. They really, really, you know, hit you hard and make you think, you know, like, some people, like, it's really hard for them. But to know that that is how it is for you and for you to stage this, you know, like, I don't know if it was, like, a stunt for you to get even more popular or to... make more people, like, I don't know, make more homophobes, like, get caught. But
we won't even talk about what the alleged reasons are, because again, you know, these things change and they're fluid. But mm-hmm. What I do hope is that he would be listening to this, and you never know. And I would love for him to hear from someone who's a fan and who has a stream of consciousness like you do. Mm-hmm. Talk to him about why what he did is so harmful.
It definitely is.
That it's wrong obviously goes without saying, but that it's harmful is really the crux of, I think, why a lot of people are disappointed. And just so our listeners know that this is not a scripted podcast. We were supposed to talk about politics, but the conversation took us in other directions, which I love, because it's definitely a lot more organic that way. But when we come back, I do want to get your take on politics. So please stay with us. You are listening to The Life Is Not Complicated, Strong Opinions Podcast. I'm Liz Wallace, in for Carlos Wallace.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, lift off.
The other 99 times. Count your blessings. Season 2, showing now on NetNY.TV, Theos by Verizon, Channel 48. Optimum Channel 30 and Spectrum Channel 97. Season 1 streaming on Amazon Prime Video.
You are listening to the Life Is Not Complicated Strong Opinions Podcast, and I'm literally telling my guest Yasser how sad I am that this is the final segment.
I know.
I've just been having such a great conversation. Again, Carlos Wallace is off on a motivational speaking tour. I'm Liz Baldless filling in for him, and having just a very enlightening dialogue with an intelligent young millennial.
Thank you.
Is it okay to call you guys millennials? Like, does that bother you at all?
Not at all, because, you know, people think this age is about swag and dripping and all
that.
What
is it about?
For me, it's about, honestly, like, for me, like you said, millennials, people who could think, you know, for me, it's about, can a person have a conversation, or can you only have a conversation through texting, or can you actually have a conversation? Can a person go and surprise his mom for his birthday, or just send her a birthday text, or just buy her flowers? So my thing is, like, being unique, you know, so everybody trying to join the wave, trying to follow everyone, trying to follow the same style, dressing wise, talking wise, everything wise. My thing is being who you are, and, you know, that's my thing. So
do
if you want to
follow the political landscape at all, like, what are your thoughts about our current political climate?
Honestly, I see government who are not on the same terms. I see our commander in chief wanting to do certain things, and I see Congress having other things. I see our commander in chief, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I read something, I don't know if it's true or not, but he's trying to legalize homosexuality in other countries, which I think is great, because again, I'm a Muslim person, in my culture, it's not permissible to be a homosexual, but if that is who you are, you know, you shouldn't be in jail for it, you shouldn't be beat to death for it, and if he wants to make that legalized, I think that's great, but this thing with building a wall and all that stuff, there's a lot of people who are pro-wall, but I think that with all this money and all the debt that we already have, we have $1 trillion in debt, I don't think a wall is the answer to our problems right now.
Are you and your peers concerned about the future of our country, or do you think, you know, you can handle whatever is gonna come your way?
A lot of my friends, especially my female friends, when he was selected, you know, a lot of them cried because of he made a comment like, you know, locker room talk, grab women by the blank. So after that day he was elected, I had a class. I had this class with my teacher, and she was crying because she thought that this person, because, you know, when you're president, you have to hold yourself to a certain standard. Like, when Obama went on Jimmy Kimmel and all these, you know, late night talk shows, they would say, like, you know, like, you know, he wouldn't even joke. He would say, no. Like, you know, like, everything about him is professional, classy, and stuff.
He always remained very dignified.
But you have a president who is, I believe, more busy with Twitter than listening to America. He's more busy with saying which news anchor is fake news. He's more busy with, you know, like,
things that are not of the government.
Things that are not really the government.
For the well-being of our country.
So it was hard. It actually shocked me, but whatever happens with this country, I've lived here for 21 years. I've been an American citizen for 21 years. I know that no matter what happens, that our forefathers have made this country for, you know, we have the commandment, we have right to religion, we have right to speech. No matter what happens, they can't take that away from us. So whatever does happen, it might be a challenge, but I'm not scared because I know what my rights are. I know what I'm allowed to do. I know I could be whoever I am in this country. So whatever challenge comes through me, I could handle it, and I believe my peers could handle it too.
I believe so as well. Mm-hmm. Are you into social media at all?
Yeah, I am.
What platforms are you on?
I'm on Instagram. Occasionally, if I have time, I go on Facebook. I sometimes check out Snapchat. Basically, that's it.
Do you think social media adds to society, or does it take away from it, especially in the way we communicate with one another?
I can't say that social media could be one, or I could say it could be both, because with social media, like, a lot of people like are not kept in the dark. They find stuff out. For example, if you know, like, a very big killer was on the loose and he was found, mm-hmm. or finally a law was passed, or, like, for example, if your favorite player got signed by your favorite team, you know, back in the days we would have to wait overnight and read it in the newspaper. And but today we get notifications straight on our phone. So I think that social media is great for that. But I also think social media is not great because it's made us very lazy, and it's, you know, like,
yeah.
made everything easy. Before, people like would have to physically make a stand for something. Rosa Parks, she had to get arrested. She had to literally sit to make a statement.
Society was more action.
Right. And now if you want to make a statement, you just try to keep it under 140 characters, or you just try to post like a nice caption and you retweet it, and that's what it is.
And so much gets lost in the translation.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that's where I see social media, like, not contributing to society, but it's honestly either or. It's like whatever you do with it. It's like, you know, like junk food. You could enjoy it. It can make you feel happy. But if you do too much of it, it's going to make you feel like garbage.
Now, the general feeling, I like junk food, and it does make me feel like garbage.
Me too. Me
too. Now, the general feeling among adults is that your generation, you either don't care about what's happening in the world around you, or you think you've got it all figured out, so you just tune out the rhetoric, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're all coming together to form your own progressive, some socialist movement. Mm-hmm. Are we off base?
I would say that a little bit, because the way that our parents and our elderly think is old school.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they think, we could never think that. If you could teach me how my grandfather, how my mother thinks, it probably wouldn't stick to me. And same way, like, if you try to teach my mother how I think or how I know the world works, it wouldn't work the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, you know, for a lot of things, you know, experience is important. If you're a surgeon, you know, your experience is really important. You would rather be in the hands of someone who had, like, you know, thousands of hours of experience in the OR rather than someone who just graduated school. But at the same time, you know, you need a little bit of both. You need that new, fresh creativity. Mm-hmm. And you also need to know, you know, like, your roots, where it all came from. So I do believe that, you know, like, our elderly and the adults think that, you know, like, we don't know anything. We don't know, like, what the real world is. But honestly, like, us having immigrant parents and growing up here, I believe that we know how it is because we were grown up. Even if we didn't, like, you know, we weren't raised in horrible conditions because our parents took care of us, we've seen it. Like, I've seen it because my family is really huge. I have relatives who are really rich. I have relatives, you know, who have, like, their backyards are forests. And I have relatives who, like, four of them sleep in one room.
Mm.
So I've seen it all. And honestly, if you're old school or new school, it doesn't matter. It honestly, like, what matters is what your end goal is. If you want to do something, like, you know, if you want to do math, doing it, like, the long way without a calculator, that's fine. If you're good at math and you want to use a calculator to save time, that's fine. At the end, if you're a good student, if you understand math, that's all that matters. So that's what I think.
What do you think about the plight of immigrants these days? What's been done, what's been said You talked a little bit about building the wall and how that's really just not the way to go. Mm-hmm. You're the son of immigrants. I'm the daughter of immigrants.
Right.
What is your sense about that?
America is the land of the free and home of the brave. Men and women gave up their lives just so this land could be great for us. Mm-hmm. For us today, not for them. They weren't going to get any commission out of it. It was for us today. And we call this country, you know, we call Dallas America's team. You know, that's their nickname. Mm-hmm. We call America the land of opportunity. And opportunities are not only limited to us, but immigrants as well. Like I said before, America is the land of opportunity. Immigrants, the reason, why would someone leave their house to come to a new country? You know, like, if I live in a neighborhood where everybody, I know everybody, I love the local restaurants, I love the park, you know, like, why would I leave? Mm-hmm. Why would I leave that? Why would I leave my mother and father to go somewhere where I don't know a single person? Why would I leave somewhere where I don't have a set job, where I don't know how the people are? So, you know, people give up a lot to come to this country. And to say that, you know, immigrants, you know, we shouldn't take immigrants, or immigrants, like illegal immigrants, should be banned from here. You know, that really goes against saying that America is a land of opportunity, because you're not giving them an opportunity. Just because you weren't born on American soil, just because you weren't born on this land, you were born in a place where the sky was always blue. You were born on the same air that we all breathe. You were born in a world where the sky turn is day and night. Just because you weren't born on American soil, you have to be taken away from your family. Just because you weren't born in American soil, you're gonna be separated from your children. Your children are gonna live alone, and your father's gonna live across the border, and he's gonna be wondering every day, how's my daughter, what's happening? You know, and being tortured. So immigration, I think that it's come a long way, and I believe that there has to be a new way to let people be legal immigrants. I believe that there should be a different way to let more people who live in these countries where, like, you know, like Syria and like Africa and all these people who are like literally drinking dirty water, and, you know, like, there's like, there's nothing, there's no electricity, there's nothing, you know?
And that, they're being besieged by Boko Haram in Africa and ISIS.
Exactly, and so much going on. And to know that we live in a country where if someone is poor, there's food stamps. If someone doesn't have a house, they have shelters. If someone is getting abused in their house, America has places where you could live safe.
Yeah.
To know that all these resources are available, and there's so many people out there who need it and want it, and to not let them get it because of where you were born or because of an application process, I believe is ridiculous.
But there are laws, though. Let's be fair.
Mm-hmm.
There are laws to come into this country, and we don't want to take away from
definitely.
But I completely understand.
Right. There's a lot of people who are not kept in the loop. They don't understand. And just if we had a thing to make it easier for people, or like just a system where it could, you know, like decide, you know, like, we'll make it easy for you, here's your immigration, or like, this is where you are right now, let's fix it. This isn't the purge. Like, we're like, 1 second we could just be taken away from our family. That's horrifying.
Well, our time is running out, so I want to do really quick, like a speed round. Mm-hmm. What is your greatest fear?
My greatest fear is not finishing college and paying all that student debt and not making my parents proud.
Your greatest strength in life?
My greatest strength is knowing that no matter where I am or what I have or don't have, I am capable of doing things just if I keep my mind to it. So I guess my greatest strength is being positive. We're always seeing the silver lining in everything.
Where will you be in 5 years?
I see myself in 5 years employed, working in, becoming an emergency room PA. I see myself hopefully buying Super Bowl tickets where my New York Giants are.
Yes.
And I see myself having a family, and I see myself paying for my mother and seeing her retired and her finally enjoying life for how life should be enjoyed. That's where I see myself in 5 years.
I was going to ask you another question, but there's no way I can't leave it at that, because that is the most beautiful thought. Thank you, Yasser.
No problem.
It has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
I'm going to have you back. We're going to have to do a part two.
I'd love to.
After you graduate from pharmacy school and you get your degree as a physician assistant.
Correct.
You're back on this show. You hear that, Carlos?
I love to.
Thank you, my dear. You have been listening to the Life is Not Complicated Strong Opinions podcast with my guest Yasser Ahmed. I really hope you enjoyed this segment. Carlos Wallace will be back for the next episode. It's been great filling in for him and sharing these thoughts with you. I look forward to being back. Have a good one.
You are listening to the Life is Not Complicated. You are Strong Opinions Podcast.
The biggest reward for me is how much it has inspired students.
I think something that really opened my eyes was when he said, everybody knows the information in this book already. It just takes a little bit of reminding. And that really opened my eyes to how I perceived the book from there on. So I really think it affected, but it was overall positive impact on my life.
When I visit campuses and classrooms and see the excitement on their face and, of course, overwhelm me with questions, that's my biggest reward. That's what I enjoy the most.
To purchase Life is Not Complicated, You Are, or the other 99 times, or download the audio versions, please visit carloswallace.com.
Hey guys, don't forget to text COMPLICATED to 22828 for your chance to win a copy of the best-selling audiobook, Life is Not Complicated, You Are. That's 22828 for your chance to win a copy of audio version of Life is Not Complicated, You Are.
Please visit www.carloswallace.com. That's Carlos Wallace. We would love to hear your opinion.
To join our email list, please visit carloswallace.com.